We have come to the end of this series looking at the idea of Sabbath, this ancient idea which has been interpreted in different ways over thousands of years. And we've had some talks on different topics as a part of that, but what I asked Emily to speak on, and then Emily's feeling of why that fits best in the format of an interview, is the ideas of Sabbath as rhythms of grace. So we'll get onto a bit of what that means. But probably it's helpful to start off just by asking, we've already recognised that for different people, Sabbath means different things. It has its outworkings in different ways. When you're talking about Sabbath this morning, what are you meaning by that? How have you come to understand Sabbath?
Sure. It's been fascinating hearing the different talks. I think Ted highlighted right at the very start different aspects of Sabbath that I hadn't really kind of considered. And then Pauline pointed out how there was potentially generational difference and upbringing difference in what we understand Sabbath to mean. And I think from kind of hearing all of that, but also my experience previously, there's a couple of things that Sabbath kind of looks like or means to me in principle. The first and probably easiest starting point is in Matthew 11, where Jesus says, "Are you tired? Yes. Are you worn out? Yep. Are you burnt out on religion? Maybe. Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace." And if I was going to start anywhere in what I think Sabbath is, I think that verse, that's the Message version, which is why it maybe doesn't sound as familiar. The idea of unforced rhythms of grace that bring real rest, that Jesus invites us into, maybe commands us to do. The other thing that I found really helpful, which I know some small groups have started to have a look at, is a framework that John Mark Comer puts forward around Sabbath. And he talks about Sabbath as four different words, which are all different interpretations of the Hebrew translation of the word Shabbat. So the first one is stop. So how are we having a rhythm in our lives where we stop? Because that isn't our disposition normally. The second is rest. How do we, as an act of resistance, almost take a step back and rest from what everyday life looks like? Then the third one is delight. It's not just about stopping and here's a list of things that I'm not going to do. What are we going to do that brings joy, that brings the joy that God has for us, but also brings joy just because we're doing stuff that we love, spending time with the people that we love. And then the fourth one is worship. And that's about what I quite often say it when I start a service on a Sunday, it's an opportunity to realign ourselves, reorient our lives to God once a week, or we'll come on to what the kind of rhythms can look like. Daily, how are we doing something that re-centers ourselves? Because ultimately Sabbath is about worship. So I think that is a kind of a framework I found really helpful. It's about real rest, but it's not just about rest as in like a passive rest, like just watch TV, don't do anything, disconnect. It's not disconnecting, it's engaging in something. So first you need to stop to be able to do that, but it's an active rest that brings joy, brings delight, and ultimately is about worship and reorienting our lives towards God. So that would be like in as succinct as I'm able to be, because I'm not a very succinct person, that would be kind of what Sabbath is to me. And I guess we'll come on to talk a little bit about what on earth does that actually look like and how does that play out?
Yeah, I guess the missing part of the equation, if that's what Sabbath as an idea looks like, and then as you said, you've got to think about what that means in your life and in our lives, the missing piece is, what is our cultural backdrop for this conversation? If we're talking about Sabbath, part of the reason it looks different for different people over the ages is not just because we're each unique and have our own kind of preference and interpretations, but because culture and society changes. Even the world today, we've got, you know, multicultural society, the world is international, obviously, but Sabbath is applied differently in different places. What do you see as being the cultural context of Sabbath today? And then what challenges and opportunities does that highlight that we're facing as a society?
Sure. It wasn't that long ago that shops were shut on a Sunday, that the way that culture was set up, or cultural architecture, we could call it, was geared towards the idea of Sabbath. So maybe not for us and our generation, but the generation above, the way that the world is set up and our society, culture is set up, meant that Sabbath was something that could naturally take place because the rhythms of what was expected as your week would kind of enable that. And what we've seen is then a shift away from that. And actually now the idea of Sabbath, whatever that kind of looks like, is really countercultural for what our society looks like. And I think, I mean, that applies to everyone, but I think particularly for our generation, there's a kind of millennial trope of busyness being a badge of honour, and overworking almost being expected. And it is an act of resistance to do Sabbath. It's not something that the cultural architecture is set up for or allows for. So for us to do this is something that won't come naturally and we have to work at. I also think that it's something that people really crave. So I think we think, oh, busyness is like, that's what it is, isn't it? How are you? I'm busy all the time, really, really busy. And that might not apply to everyone, but that certainly feels like, particularly our kind of generation, there is this thing of busyness is to be celebrated. But when you say to someone, oh, like, I haven't got any plans today, it's like, oh, amazing. Like, that sounds wonderful to not have any plans or any obligations or anything. But that isn't the norm. We always have stuff to be doing. So I think, yeah, we've come from a place where culture is set up for Sabbath, and we are now very much not in that place. Like today's Sunday, if we take Sunday as a typical kind of day of rest, everything is open, we can come and we can do church, which is a great, hopefully a great experience for a few hours, and then we can go off and we can do chores and we can go shopping and we can see this person, we can get ourselves ready for the week and we can meal prep and whatever. I don't know what you do on your Sundays. but there isn't that natural pause, that natural stop anymore. And so it is going against the grain. But I think an opportunity that comes from that is, as a conversation there isn't there, if you're maybe chatting to family who aren't Christians and they say, well, what are you doing with your day? And you say, well, actually, for me, it looks like stopping and resting, and it looks like worship. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's different to what I'm doing. And there's a conversation there, isn't there? Because we're living differently if we adopt this.
I remember pre-Clara, we have BC and AD, we have before Clara and after Clara. Before Clara, one weekend we were staying with my family, and it was Sunday morning and didn't go to church. We went to a place called Top Golf, which is a lovely little, a couple of chairs in the building. Essentially, it's a driving range for golf. But it was a really sunny Sunday morning. We went with my brother and sister-in-law, had a little like bowl of chips and a little midday pint, and thought, this is what people are doing on Sunday when they're not coming to church. I could get on board with this. But it is that choice, as you say, of choosing to worship. My golf could be worship. Certainly, some people hope so.
I think there's something in what you just said. I mean, maybe not every Sunday to have your midday pint at the golf, but there's something in there about delight, isn't there? That if we come back to that framework of stop and rest, the Sabbath isn't just about the rituals of things like coming to church. This is one mechanism that we can have for worship and for that rest. But actually, if going and playing golf or whatever your thing is about delight and is doing something that brings that joy, I think that's part of Sabbath.
Yeah. Oh, I wasn't trying to say that we were practicing Sabbath at that point. Just he said about the culture, architecture, things being open. The Top Golf was open.
I know.
The bar was definitely open. we're already slanting a little bit more towards kind of your own personal experience, and I guess for us, shared experience. If that's the kind of social context, what's your personal context when you, Emily, talk about Sabbath? What does that look like for you? I know, but for the sake of other people, what are the challenges and opportunities you have?
I think sometimes so Mike puts together the speaking rota. I think sometimes he picks someone because you're like, yeah, this topic is like, they're all about this. They've nailed it. That is not the case. I've been going, like I'm going to speak out of a place of realizing the hard way that this is extremely important. Because this is something I'm very, very bad at and not my natural disposition at all. And so hopefully using myself as a case study will be a bit of a learning experience to be able to share kind of what this has looked like for me and for us. And then maybe we can think about how that applies to each of us, because it will be completely different for me than it is for you. I guess our context is that our life is very chaotic at the moment. My disposition is to work and work and work and keep doing and keep going until I completely crash. And that's a very unhealthy cycle to be in, and that's where I've been since I can remember. And so for me, a kind of reframing of what are the rhythms of my life to make sure that that is not how I'm living is a massive shift from my natural disposition. And so as we've been, this is our sixth week of looking at the topic of Sabbath. We've had loads of chats in our small group. We've been chatting together about what this looks like, because it's genuinely been a massive, like, oh my goodness, I need to change the way that my life is set up. Not to be dramatic, and it's not the first time I've had this thought, but it has been a real, I've really tried to embody this subject and really try and practically apply it, recognizing how important it is to do Sabbath. Because if we just keep on going and keep on going and keep on going and keep on going, there will be a point where we crash and burn out. And I've definitely experienced that over the last 10 years. And so trying to put rhythms in that can be rhythms, not rules, because I think there's a big distinction there, to ensure that that doesn't happen. The kind of literal context that we're living in right now, aside from having been in Paris for the last week, which was physically exhausting but mentally kind of great and refreshing, I'm working two part-time jobs that make up full-time hours. Mike's working full-time hours. Also would normally be doing a day and a half of childcare with Clara, and I do half a day, but in February our nursery closed the room that she was in, so for the last few months we haven't had any childcare. So Mike's been doing full-time job and 3.5 days with Clara, and I've been doing full-time job and 1.5 days with Clara, which mathematically doesn't add up. And so the kind of the context in which we're living is chaotic, and it's kind of all well and good to have principles of, oh, we'll have a day of rest, but regardless of what work and that kind of schedule looks like, with a toddler, it's not restful. And like, she's, you know, even like going on holiday, like, man, we did not know what we were like. When we went to Paris last time, it was a lot more relaxing than this, I think. And it was lovely, but like, Clara always has needs, and so it's not restful. So what on earth does Sabbath look like when I don't feel like I have time to like even watch half an hour of TV or like read a book or do anything that feels remotely like for me or refreshing? Or yeah. And the answer to that question until quite recently has been like, it doesn't exist, and we have just been running on empty. And then more recently, we've kind of either really intentionally or almost by accident, by realizing we need to sort of do something about that, started to put stuff in place. So if I think about what Sabbath kind of on, because we're kind of, this is the last one in our series, we're thinking practically. What it could look like, I think, is a kind of rule of thumb or a starting place is a 24-hour period, which for some people works really well. For other people, it's just totally impractical. For us, leading a church means that Sunday is a 24-hour period. Like, love you all, this isn't that restful all the time. And so how do we work out what 24 hours looks like when actually we have obligations within that? So then we're like, okay, well, maybe a physical 24 hours block doesn't necessarily work for us. And that's why it's rhythms and not rules around this stuff. But as a general principle, how can we do things that allow us to have that stop, rest, delight, worship? So we've started going for coffee on a Sunday afternoon because we love going for coffee pre and post Clara. We love going for coffee. there's something about the, I guess, ritual almost of sitting with a coffee that is from somewhere where it takes a long time to make it, and you can sit and enjoy time together, the three of us. So that's something that we, again, not as a rule, because sometimes there's other stuff going on in life, but we try and do a Sunday afternoon coffee somewhere. We are trying to spend more intentional time together when we have it. Mike works a lot of evenings. So how are we having that intentional time where we're enjoying one another's company, where my head isn't full of a to-do list in some way? How are we having a really great time with one another as family? But also, I think a big part of Sabbath can be community. And how do we do Sabbath with others, whether that is a meal with people, whether it's coffee but with friends, whether it's our small group. There are opportunities within our week where we can take a bit of that idea of Sabbath. And we've tried to put stuff in place like that. Another massive area for me, which has been a theme like the last year or so, but my small group kind of have been a bit of like a workshop for me and trying to figure some of this stuff out, is how much I use my phone. And I'm aware that this won't apply to everyone, but I hope that if I talk about this for me, either it will directly apply to you or you might be able to think of what your equivalent is. My kind of feeling around my phone has been that I use it too much. We all know, kind of know that. But I was listening to the John Mark Comer podcast around some of this stuff, and he talked, or one of them on there, talked about how, particularly maybe younger generations, but I think for everyone, to be available is to be connected. So if we are available on our phone all the time, we are connected to people, and therefore that means that if we switch off our phones or choose not to, like for a 24-hour period, let's say, if we choose to not answer it or not look at Instagram or whatever the thing is, then if to be available is to be connected, then to be unavailable is to be disconnected, and to be disconnected is to feel isolated, and there's a fear of missing out. And I think relationship with communication with others is something that I've massively had to think about in the context of Sabbath, because if I've got my phone notifications on and I'm trying to have like rest, then as soon as something pings in my pocket, it's like burning a hole in my pocket and I need to find out what it is. It could be like my gran, she's really into WhatsApp now. Or it could be, I mean, I have a work phone, so it won't be work. It could be something that demands something of me or brings anxiety. And Sarah and I were chatting at a small group about how many notifications we get, and I told her the number of WhatsApp notifications I get every day, and she almost fell off her chair. And it was a really helpful, I mean, small group's been a great way of finding out, because we have different generations in our small group, finding out what does this practically look like. For me, Sabbath needs to be taking time away from that being connected, being available thing. And it doesn't mean like forever, but if we're sort of treating it like I'm at crisis point right now, that's something that needs to change. And another part of it is that kind of idea of active rest. So what are we doing that isn't just, I'm exhausted at the end of a day, I'm going to chuck the TV on, watch something mindless. Although I love mindless TV. My mindset has been like, I need to just watch something rubbish to switch off. And I'm like, well, this isn't delight, is it? This isn't any of those things that I've just said. It isn't active rest. So I think, sorry, I've chatted a long time around this one, basically, in the context of chaos that our life slightly feels like right now, trying to find those moments to break through that and to have that kind of Sabbath thing. And then the other side of it is that worship, realigning ourselves with God, trying to find rhythms around how I'm reading the Bible, how I'm doing, like the basics of kind of Christian 101. If you're a Christian, here are some things that might be helpful. How do they fit into my chaotic life? Because it doesn't look like the same as what it used to. How, if we're serving on a Sunday and doing lots of things, am I kind of really engaging and choosing on a Sunday morning, whether regardless of if it's the best talk in the world or not, whether it's the best worship in the world or not, how am I choosing this to be a space where I connect with God? Because I massively think that what's going on a Sunday, it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, this stuff is great, but it doesn't really matter. It's about our heart attitude. And if we're coming with that Sabbath worship attitude to a Sunday, then we will connect with God and we will be able to reorient our lives towards him. And this will be a place where that can happen. But it isn't just about Sunday. And it's how do we do that throughout our weeks? And so I'm still trying to figure out what that looks like. I'm going to different worship things with some friends at other churches sometimes so that I've got that space, but also I think massively trying to choose to enter into what's happening here on a Sunday because I don't want to miss out on what God's doing. I think I'll stop there.
It reminds me, I might butcher this a little bit, there's a story, I think it's the Wesley's mum. Anyone know where I'm heading with this? I think there's kind of 7 or 8 children or something like that, maybe even 10. And she used to have this time, like an hour a day or something, where she would put a tea towel, maybe probably less than an hour, she put a tea towel over her head, and all the children knew that was mum's time for prayer and with God. And that's the picture is so silly, but the principle is so valuable of setting those boundaries to protect that those rhythms of worship in a chaotic environment. But yeah, thank you for sharing all that. You started to touch on it, but what finally then does that? What can we all take away? We've heard enough about your life for now. What can? How does that apply more broadly? Give us something for everyone to take home.
Sure. I did actually write some notes, but I haven't read them once whilst I've been doing this. I'm just going to check I haven't missed anything important. I guess if we come back to those first principles that John Mark Comer has helpfully packaged up for us in a place that you can listen to on a podcast and all other kinds of things, but of stop, rest, delight and worship. How are we doing that stuff? Because Sabbath, we've listened to 5 other talks around the idea of Sabbath, but how is this going to change your life? Because it feels like it's changing mine out of necessity. But actually, this is a necessity for all of us, whether we feel like we rest well or not. To have Sabbath is something that is the first thing in the Bible that God says is holy, is Sabbath. He makes a day holy. And it means that it's set apart time. And I think it's a command, but it's a command which comes as rhythms of grace, not rules that you have to stick with. So I think a few things. Figuring out what this looks like for yourself as a general principle. What does Sabbath look like daily? What does it look like weekly? What does it look like monthly and annually? How are we taking time out? Because what Sabbath means for me will be different to what it means for everyone else. But what are your rhythms daily, weekly, monthly, annually? How does this look? So that'd be the first thing. How do we kind of apply that? The second would be, what does Sabbath look like for you in the context of community? Is it your church small group? Is it your family? Is it, whatever. What does the community aspect of this look like? Because I think it's really important that we don't do Sabbath alone, because there's a richness that comes from sharing with others and worshipping with others, resting with others, delighting with others. I think when we do this stuff, we become better people, don't we? That we start to exhibit the fruits of the Spirit. If we're rested and if we're delighting and if we're reorienting ourselves towards God, we are going to grow in the joy that we have. And so doing that in the context of community is a wonderful thing. So I think that's the second thing. There was going to be a third, but I've forgotten what it was. Should I see if I wrote it down?
just on the back of that, just a reminder, I think right at the start of the series, Ted was speaking about Sabbath as entering into God's rest, having a state of heart and a state of mind where you're entering into God's rest. And I think that's such an amazing picture. As you say, it doesn't have to look a certain way. It's those spaces in your own lives, wherever that might be, where you are taking those step into God's rest as opposed to stepping away from it sometimes, which we can do.
Yeah, and helpful. I'm going to use you, Ted, as a little case study, if that's all right. I didn't ask permission. In our small group, when we were chatting about what does this practically look like, we had this really interesting mix. There was me bringing all of whatever this is. And then we had a couple of primary school teachers who were saying, well, I can't do 24-hour. Like, I need to do some work on the weekend sometimes to be ready for the week. How am I supposed to have this rhythm? And then asked Ted and Maeve, what does Sabbath look like? And they said, well, when you're retired, every day feels like a Sabbath. That was Ted's words. And then Maeve said, but things do crop up. That was your words. And I loved that. And I think actually, my experience of needing to disconnect from my phone and my experience of the busyness as a badge of honour that I need to kind of work against the grain of culture with, perhaps isn't everyone here's experience. Maybe you can do Sabbath kind of fairly easily, but actually what does this look like for you? How are you going to grow in this? Because as we grow in Sabbath, we grow in our relationship with Jesus, with one another. And as Mike was chatting about last week, about our relationship with ourselves and how we view ourselves. So what does it look like if you're retired? What does it look like if you're a primary school teacher and your work rhythms just mean it's very hard to have a specific day of rest? What does it look like if you have a toddler who doesn't allow you to rest? It's going to look different for each of us, but how can we take these principles of stopping, of resting, of delighting, and of worship in a cultural architecture that isn't set up or lend itself to us doing that? So there isn't an answer. I was chatting to a friend at the park run yesterday who isn't a Christian, who's sort of just saying, oh, what are you doing this weekend? And explaining, I'm doing this talk about rest. And they were like, ooh, rest. and I started explaining what I was going to share. And she was like, well, what's the answer? You haven't, I think she was like, I need that rest. She also has a toddler. What's the answer? You haven't said an answer. So there isn't one answer, but the answer is that we reorientate ourselves towards Jesus. We worship and we delight in order that we have that joy. The what that looks like practically for you will look different for me. I think that's probably enough, but I have been thinking about this probably fairly nonstop for the last 6 weeks. So if you want to chat more, I'm very happy to.
Well, as you say, reorienting ourselves to Jesus ends where we began, where that Matthew 11 verse, come to me all who are weary and I will give you rest. It's not you will find rest, you won't have to work for it. Just come to me and I'll give you that rest. So that's kind of the start, the beginning and the end, the alpha and omega of this talk is that Jesus gives us that rest.
Great.
Thank you, Emily.